KOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the, I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO for our annual live broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival, broadcasting from Thursday, July 4th through Sunday, July 7th from noon to 10 p.m. This year's festival lineup includes St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Say She She, and Green Sky Bluegrass. Again, that's KBOO's broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival live from the Tom McCall Waterfront, starting at noon from Thursday, July 4th through Sunday, July 7th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/wbf24.
KBOO. And you have tuned in to KBOO, indeed, your favorite community radio station. And, well, you're tuned in to our fifth live panel in commemoration of Pride Month and LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. So yes, once more, join us in celebration of the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer in question, and intersex, asexual, or agender, as well as Two-Spirit community members. Tonight, we're live in Studio One with our fifth panel, Queer Business Owners. And, well, before we go ahead with the panel, I want to remind you that you can easily collaborate to this awesome experiment of community radio by simply going to kboo.fm/give. Or just grab your phone and type in the letters KBOO to the number 44321. And lastly, you can always mail your participation to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you so much for tuning in. The phone lines will be open, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Remember, participation will be brief. And well, let's go ahead with our panels. How are you guys? Can you hear me? Okay, well, I can't hear much right now. But what about if we go ahead with our name, pronouns, age, as well as gender and or sexual identity or relationship style?
A direct tunnel from here.
27, I identify as queer, non-binary. I just really like queer for its historical and political meanings, and I feel like it encapsulates my gender and sexuality and methodology.
And it looks like we didn't quite catch your name. Could you repeat that?
Yes, my name's Kayla.
Thank you. And then let's go down the line here. Can you let us know?
Sorry,
Your name, pronouns.
Oh, yes. Sorry. My name is Anna. My pronouns are she, her. I'm 32 years old. I am a cis woman and married to my beautiful wife, Hillary.
My name is Valentine. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm 25. I identify as queer and non-binary. My relationship style depends on day to day, I guess.
I like the way you roll. So I wanted to go around and ask you all, I know you're all in various stages of starting or running your businesses, doing your work, doing your organizing. Can you all tell us a little bit about how it got started, your intentions, and what you are about? Valentine?
Yeah, I think my business ultimately started with me doing my own hair in my bathroom. When I was a teenager, I'm a hairstylist, and ultimately kind of evolved into doing my friend's hair and realizing that it was something that I could do as a career. So I've been a hairstylist for like 3 years now, and I mostly have queer clients.
Yeah, my business is called Ecstatic Ceremonies, and I'm a queer wedding officiant, though I serve healthy love of all kinds. And I started it in 2021 after the birth of my child, and my whole life kind of turned around, and I got to pursue this dream, this idea that I had had for a while. So, that's how it started.
I'm working currently, but very excited to start my own kind of consulting business. I'm a queer historian and preservationist, and I'm really inspired by both the history of Portland's queer preservationists and community historians, and being a queer person writing about queer history. So looking to, you know, transfer from kind of working for people to working for myself and collaborating in a different kind of way with a consulting business.
To piggyback off of that, what do you hope to achieve in starting this, and how do you think that'll permeate in the community?
What I hope to achieve is definitely foregrounding queer methodology and queer perspectives that aren't really in the work right now, or being kind of, there's a lot of politics around how history is written, and I just want to uplift the kind of taboo sides and darker sides of history that are often washed over. So I definitely want, that's definitely a goal. Another goal, my work is very community-centered, so I really love connecting with people over our history in Portland and over queer history across the nation. So definitely bringing in community, and that's kind of how I found my Portland community, is through history. So I love just being able to connect that way.
Thank you. Speaking of historically queer things, historically queers have not been allowed to get married. How have you seen those sorts of things change as you've gotten into this business, and how do you find it varies from our very normalized standard cis heteronormative wedding?
Totally. So part of what I love about my business is that the way I perceive weddings, and I think as a queer person with queer family members, is I know that queer people have always committed to each other. They've always raised families together, and done so with no legal recognition and, systemic abuse and harm. Forever. And so I know that queer people have so much courage and so much joy and brightness in their love, and they don't, you know, it's always going to be here. And so what I hope to celebrate in my ceremonies are the qualities of courage that my couples take in going deeper with each other, with their communities and their families, that are so not surface level. And so, you know, I think sometimes the wedding industrial complex, in fact, a lot of the time, is a pretty scary place, you know, full of like a lot of money being spent and, and a lot of stress and all those things. And I like to think of Ecstatic Ceremonies as, you know, aside from all of that, you know, we're celebrating people's efforts towards loving each other and being really honest and vulnerable with each other. And even if that's all we had and there was no, you know, paperwork, no official recognition or anything, people still deserve to be celebrated.
Speaking of celebrating people, I know that oftentimes people use different forms of self-expression to celebrate themselves and their inner desires. Valentine, can you speak on that a little bit more in your work with transforming people to be the version of themselves that they see?
Yeah, for sure. I think that something really beautiful about doing hair for queer people to me is that a lot of your physical appearance when you're gay, and especially trans, requires a lot of time and commitment to, you know, looking like how you feel on the inside. But I think there's so much power in getting your hair done because it is like an immediate change that can make you feel more connected to who you are and like how you see yourself and your gender expression. And I also think that hair is one of the number one ways that we can recognize that another person is gay. And I think, yeah, just like it is so beautiful to me to be able to do somebody's hair and see them light up in the mirror and sort of like come into themselves a little bit and feel like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but affirmed, feel like affirmed in, you know, how they see themselves. And it's really powerful that it's so immediate. I think that with a lot of other self-expression, I mean, transitioning takes a really long time. It takes a lot of money. And there are a lot of things that like kind of block that process. But you can get a haircut and feel like I'm so beautiful, I'm so masculine, or something like that. And it's like, you know, you can walk into the salon and leave in an hour and feel like different.
Can I just plug that you did give me the 80s haircut of my dreams that I wanted? So definitely, yes.
Yeah, that's a little side note. And like a funny little thing about community in Portland is that I do Kayla's hair, who's also on the panel. And we had no idea. And yes, Kayla has some very beautiful, powerful curls. We talked about, you know, 80s vampires, a lot of 80s movies. We were looking at Alien, and we were looking at, what were you talking about?
That was most of it, I think.
Yeah.
Being cool.
Yeah.
I will also have to double down and say Valentine also does my hair. I think that really is the fun thing about living in such a qu'est-ce que c'est, lush queer community here in the greater Oregon area, is you do really build a sense of knowing people who are participating in, for example, these queer businesses, whether they're on the back end, whether they're getting married themselves. And you really get to build the community so often we were robbed of when we finally came out as ourselves. And speaking of that, I was curious, what are your main goals and challenges as queer people trying to start some sort of organization, run your business, etc.?
Yeah, I'll start. I think one of the biggest challenges for me is like I didn't want to work in like a really typical salon setting. I didn't want to be like working with a million people every day, and I knew that I mostly wanted to work with people in my community. And finding like a spot, or like going into it essentially being an independent contractor right outside of beauty school, was really the only way that I knew I could work with mainly queer people, but also kind of get to express like the kind of hair that I want to do. So definitely a really big challenge to not, most people kind of work as an apprentice, or they work like minimum wage kind of hair jobs, and it's like really a lot of work and a lot of straight people. Yeah, so I worked at Enjoy Co. Shout out, they're just down the street, right out of beauty school. And that was really challenging to fill my books, like having absolutely no background. And yeah.
Anna, can you speak onto that as well, sort of your challenges in your industry?
Sure. So I was a teacher by trade. So I used to be a middle school teacher. So, you know, a lot of the, and I was a religion major in college. So, you know, the spiritual side of the whole thing, I got covered. You know, the public speaking, I got that. You know, the managing the group, I got that. What I had never done before was started my own business. And I started it. It was a dream I had had after planning my own wedding and having such a wonderful time with that. And, you know, in our wedding, we had like five rainbows, like all like stacked on top of each other. And it just felt like this gay sign. And so after I had my son, I realized, you know, this was kind of my chance to start my business. And what I realized was the wedding industry is seasonal. So that's a challenge, you know, making ends meet throughout the year. You know, winter months, there's like no weddings happening. And then also, like, I'm curious about you, like, building up your books, because, you know, I was also building up my, you know, my kind of repertoire, too. And at first, I was just helping out, you know, friends and family. And I'll never forget the first couple who reached out to me, who I did not know, who was a gay couple, Michael and Armando, if you're listening to this, you were my first. And yeah, and so it was tough because I was raising my son and I was a stay-at-home parent while trying to build the business. So I had to work other jobs at the same time, you know, to make ends meet for our family. And I think, you know, I had this, my wife also works, but I had another job I was doing, and I had this goal that I would build my business up to the point where I could leave that other job behind. And I finally did that this spring. So it's taken a lot of, you know, compromises to, you know, keep believing in it and believing in the idea and building it up. And obviously the support of my my wife, who helps us pay our bills as well.
I guess for historic preservation, my work has focused a lot on the National Register has been a system to document and celebrate histories, and that's been a long standard since the 60s. And another queer scholar who worked with the National Park Service to author the LGBTQ theme study to guide the National Park Service on other designations for queer sites said that the National Park Service, who runs the National Register, has provided us a useful vehicle to, in effect, queer the state-sanctioned national historic narrative, but at the same time limits the extent of the queering we can do. And I've definitely experienced that in my research and work, where I've been trying to push these really groundbreaking ideas that brings in queer theory and feminist methodology and different ways of being and the kind of standard traditional framework of preservation has pushed against what I'm trying to do in pushing the boundaries and to queer the National Register and preservation. So that's definitely, you know, I think all of us feel that cis heteronormative structures in different ways. And I guess also thinking about going into consulting, building the books up, like you both mentioned, of, you know, trying to come into a business that already has so many other names and people doing it, and being competitive and trying to show like I have the skills necessary to get these really big contracts, just being in the work already, knowing that there's different certifications that you have to meet to get these really high contracts to do this kind of work, and knowing I'm starting out at the bottom and I don't have all these certifications. So I guess just, yeah, reiterating the systems that have are hard on queer businesses.
Thank you. And for those of you just tuning in, you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. You are listening to our fifth live panel in commemoration of Pride Month and LGBTQIA2S+ heritage, and we have a caller on the line.
Yeah, indeed we do. Caller, you're live. Thank you for calling. Yeah.
Hi, I'm George, and I'm a longtime KBOO subscriber and listener. And I have been wondering, are LGBTQ views being heard and respected about the current tensions in the world between Russia and China and the U.S. and so on, especially in the Ukraine war? Or is there some other program on KBOO where I might hear what LGBTQ people feel about this?
That is a fantastic question, and I'm sure that many of our panelists would agree that to some extent, yes, in other countries, not all of the members of our community, that being the LGBTQI2+ community, aren't as represented. And can I hear some of the feelings from the panelists about that?
Yeah, I think that there are queer people everywhere, and all of these issues are bound to affect queer people more because we're already marginalized. So, of course, these things are important to us because there are gay people who are experiencing these things to a much more intense level, I think. And of course, I have compassion for everybody, but especially gay people who might be experiencing hardship.
I wondered about gay people in the United States because I look in vain in the newspaper for articles about what gay people feel about the presence of a, I guess you could call it sort of hired United States military force in Ukraine. And I think gay people are extremely sensitive to many issues about human rights. And I'm beginning to wonder if our government cares about people's feelings about this. So I just wondered about gay people in the United States. How do they feel? Do you know? Do they feel that this war is taking a lot of attention away from more important issues, or do they feel that their views are not being heard on this war?
Thank you so much for calling. These are great questions, and I think our panelists and Artie would have excellent answers.
Thank you. And are they online, by the way?
I think this was a really great line of thinking to go down, and a really great thing to clarify for those not in our community is, yes, the community, as varied as we are, have varying opinions. And while being from sort of a marginalized population, we do tend to often see that in other populations as well and try to recognize their needs for safety and rights just as well as our own. But that's not the case for every queer person. You have a lot of queer people who also support the military-industrial complex. You have a lot of queer people who are, in fact, right-wing and don't actually care about their own rights. So while maybe some of us in this room, you know, do share a lot of overlap of opinions as far as how socially, politically, even aesthetically we might identify and with the world and the things happening in the world, we cannot ever speak for the entirety of the community, especially the ever-growing community. Any additional thoughts? Kayla, as a queer historian, how have you seen this change over, especially the last 3 decades?
The first thing that comes to mind is just the intentional destruction of historical records and how that is used to say that queer people don't exist and haven't exist. So that's why my work, it feels so deeply personal, and just trying to find little moments of where queerness is in archives or in historic places and celebrate that and uplift that, because we're still being erased and being destroyed. And San Francisco's dealing with issues of redevelopment of properties that's trying to erase queer history. We have similar situations in Portland where we've lost a lot of our historic sites due to urban development. And policing has definitely erased our records and our places. So yeah, it's definitely at the forefront of how to protect these places so that we aren't being erased across the U.S. and across the world.
It is really interesting to think about how our opinions and our beliefs have been so altered by the erasing of our own history. So thank you so much for that context. I want to shift gears a little bit. That was, honestly, I think we all feel heavy and a lot to think about as far as our queer community members that do not have the same privileges as us to be able to speak freely and be on a panel such as this. I want to talk a little bit about your relationship with the queer community here in Oregon. Things you participate in, other queer spaces you are active in. How about Anna?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's an interesting question because I've been literally like in the weeds of being a mom for the last couple of years. And so, you know, that's actually been pretty interesting. You know, I came of age in Seattle. So I was in my 20s in Seattle. You know, I lived in Capitol Hill and they were, you know, their queer neighborhood. And so I felt a very strong connection to Seattle's queer scene in my youth. And now that I'm a mom, you know, everything's changing. And so some of my queer friends from high school, you know, we're reconnecting. I moved back home. You know, I grew up here. And so I've had the pleasure of becoming a queer parent alongside some of my my good friends and seeing the ways we're all raising our children, you know, with this kind of hopefulness, this kind of, you know, expansiveness for who they can be. And raising them in that environment has been really beautiful. So I can't name like really fun events and like night stuff. Maybe one of you can. But becoming a parent alongside my queer friends and family has just been a beautiful thing.
Kayla, what about you? Tell us about your connection with the local queer community, spaces, places, activities, things you enjoy.
Yeah, I'm really involved with community in my work, especially trying to connect with elders and people who have been in Portland for a really long time who can share history. I've only been here for 3 years, so finding my community has been in the archives and then going out and finding groups. Friendly House Elder Pride Services is one group I've really gotten embedded with, and doing intergenerational lunches to meet people of all different ages and different backgrounds to talk about different topics like pride or queer heroes. I'm also part of Oregon Queer History Collective, which is 30 years old this year as one of the oldest and first LGBTQIA2S+ historical societies in the region. So that's been really exciting to kind of merge hobbies and professional life. And I guess the last one I would want to shout out is Bird Hers. It's a local bird watching group led by Bo and Marty, who are really good friends. And it's every other Saturday at different locations, and it's just really beautiful queer joy out in nature, a different kind of hobby of bird watching than historical archives, but just a really great community. And they were really great in letting me lead a queer walking tour with them and kind of bird watch. So definitely look, check them out and come join us on Saturdays for bird watching.
Yeah, I would say the way I stay connected to the queer community is probably just hanging out with my gay friends a lot. I think most services that I am provided, I look for gay people. I definitely I'm still looking for like the gay bar that I want to hang out at all the time. I know Kayla and I talked about that in our last appointment. But yeah, finding like really like overtly queer spaces just to hang out in. But yeah, I'm lucky to know a lot of gay people. I'm lucky to have lived in Portland for 6 years and feel like I know everyone my age who's gay. And like, I know someone everywhere I go. And feel really
even
connected.
Here.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I do feel very connected to the queer community here in that way. Yeah, I think kind of just in a way of like everything that I do feels deeply rooted in queer community.
Second.
Third.
And I think that's what's so exciting about having this panel in particular is I find that to be a common theme amongst fellow queers is you want to support each other first and foremost, but you also want to feel safe in any environment you enter into, whether it's haircuts, history, weddings, automotive, anything. You want to feel like the person you're working with is understanding you on a human level that we may not have always been afforded. I'd also like to remind people that you are tuning in to 90.7 KBOO Portland. We are on our fifth live panel in commemoration of Pride Month and LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. And I also wanted to remind listeners that we are accepting callers at this time. You can give us a call at 503-231-8187. We are accepting calls for this queer business panel, 503-231-8187. So let's get on to the good stuff. What drives you and motivates you during times of burnout? You all are working so hard in this community. How do you get through it? And how do you take that time and space to ensure that you can keep going?
I'll start. Yeah, I think for me, when I'm in moments of burnout, I kind of just like, you know, some days my job feels like just a job. And some days I'm like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And even on the days where I feel like this is just my job and I feel like uninspired or like not super excited and like mostly stressed out about work, I remind myself that every day I get to show up to work and gossip. And what could be greater than that? But also that, you know, even on my off days or like days that I'm not super excited to come to work, I get to make somebody feel good about themselves. And that rocks.
Kayla, what about you? How do you avoid burnout?
I don't. I guess because my identity and my work is so heavily tied together. But I guess what keeps me going is kind of knowing that I get to share history and cool facts and, you know, sit in a hairstylist chair and tell you all about queer history of Portland. But I guess also in a funny way, a lot of people have been talking about, like, I'll have my own archive one day. So that's kind of cool to think about. Someone could be researching me in 50 years and referencing the work that I'm doing in this KBOO panel someday. So definitely kind of the future queers drive me as much as I look back on historical queers.
Yeah, I will say for me, I'm right in the middle of wedding season. So, you know, I have 18 couples right now and counting. So that's like 18 love stories, you know, to learn and to hold and to write. And to honor. And so I do get a little burnt out when it comes to like creativity, because you know, we're all creative people and we can't just like turn on the creativity button, you know? And so when I do get a little burnt out, first I just remind myself how much I love being my own boss. It is the best. I have nothing to prove to anyone but myself. So I love that. And then I have ADHD, and I have learned to like stagger my paychecks so that I have to work for them like a carrot, kind of. So I'm like, get to, you know, this day and that's payday and you're going to get your money. You know what I mean? So I learned to kind of structure my business in a way that works for me. I look ahead for time off, even if it's like 8 weeks away. And then the best part is it's so relational. I love my couples. I love every single one of them. I'm proud of every single one of them. I am inspired by them. And so when it comes to the wedding and it comes to standing up there with them, it is the ultimate pride. And that resets me every single time to share their stories with their communities. So yeah, that's it.
Thank you so much. Once again, I am sitting on this panel trying not to cry. I was kind of curious, as you all have stepped into sort of your specialties and interests and kind of how you share labor in this world, what are some of the biggest lessons that you've had to learn? And kind of how has this made you grow as a person? Would you like to continue?
So how has running my own business made me grow as a person?
Made you grow as a person and, yeah.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, it's interesting, like you were saying earlier, Kayla, like my identity is so entwined with my work. And like, as I've been starting a business, I've also been learning what it means to be a parent, and I've been learning what it means to be a spouse all at the same time. And so, like, so as I meet couples, I'm learning from them, like, what do you do to like make your love grow and to, you know, and to keep it going and to build your family? So I'm like learning from them, you know, yeah, how they keep their love growing. And I'm applying it to me. And also as a parent, I'm, you know, learning about patience. And as a business owner, I'm learning a lot about patience. And it's this ongoing years-long thing, like you were talking about building your books. Like, it's this ongoing years-long thing, and it's this, like, one little step at a time thing. So I think my patience has expanded exponentially.
Patience. Good. Valentine, how has your experience changed you as a person, and what lessons have you learned?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that comes to mind is that I really didn't know how to talk to people before I did this job. I mean, I would like walk into a coffee shop and be like so flustered and embarrassed just to order my coffee. And I think I felt really held back by that a lot of the time. And yeah, I just had to learn how to talk to people. I had to learn how to make small talk. And also to learn that small talk kind of rocks sometimes. And it's like a really important tool. And I think it gets a lot of flack, but I think we should all embrace it. But that being said, I have really like gotten a voice from this job. And now I'm like so friendly with people everywhere I go. I try to, you know, think about like, maybe I can make a new friend here. Like maybe I can talk to this person. And I think that's like one of the biggest lessons for me that stands out is just learning how to talk to people and also like using it as a really powerful tool, both to make community, but also to just have more fun and like bring a little bit more joy to my day.
Thank you. Thank you. Kayla, how have you changed as a person?
I guess this year has really highlighted needing like a work-life balance, since we've all talked about like our identities and our work are so entwined, of trying to separate, okay, I'm a researcher and I'm a queer person and I'm a queer person researching queer people. So definitely needing to find that work-life balance. And I guess what you said earlier of, you know, trying to say like, I've got this to myself and have that kind of confidence that Valentine was also talking about. So those are kind of the thoughts that, as you were all speaking, of just piggybacking on those ideas.
Thank you. And word is in, guys. We have another caller.
Yes.
Hello. Yeah, you are on. Can you hear us?
Are you talking to me?
Yes. Thank you for calling,
yes,
Teibu.
Okay.
Yeah, you're live.
Hi. Hi, I'm live. Okay. Well, I'm my name is Sue, and what I'm wanting to do is to ask a question about I'm curious if there is a population in Oregon that are older, above 60, because in my generation, we didn't even know about queer people, and in fact, women weren't even identified as lesbian in my generation. And I'm wondering what's happened to those folks now as they've grown older. Have some of the people become queer, or are they continuing to identify as lesbians? Yeah, that's what I want to know. Good job, panel. Thank you.
Thank you, and that's such a fantastic question. And before I let one of our panelists answer, I want to say we have previously done a queer elders panel, and so that was some local queer older folks who have at different various points in their life come out earlier, later, etc. And some of them are survivors of AIDS, homophobia, different policy changes. And so, yes, they are here, and we are so glad that they're here with us. But I think this is a perfect question for you, Kayla, being a historian.
Yeah, you brought up some interesting things that I'm dealing with in my work right now about identities being fluid and how do you categorize historical identities where people might not have publicly identified as something at one point and then publicly identified as something at a different point. So it's really interesting to think about how to do history on gender and sexuality when that's constantly shifting. I'd also plug that Friendly House Elder Pride Services have tons of people all over the metro area. They just had a barbecue, I think, last week for Pride. So there are definitely people in the area. I know a lot of the retirement homes have a lot of queer community. I helped kind of organize a Pride exhibit at one because there's so many new people moving to Oregon who are elderly and want that community. I guess one last challenge that maybe was talked about in the Queer Elders podcast is when elders have to go back or move into assisted living or a nursing home, they often have to go back into the closet, and that can be really challenging. But as was mentioned, there's a lot of queer elders here across Oregon and Portland.
Thank you. Any other panelists have any additional notes on our queer elders?
I guess my only note is that if you are a queer elder and you want a haircut, I would love to talk to you because I feel like I don't know enough queer elders. And that would be great. It would be a great way for us to connect with each other.
And I want to thank all the queer elders who have come before us because, you know, without them literally fighting, that weddings I'm doing today wouldn't be possible, or they would have to be done in private. And it's beautiful to be able to do it out in the open, just as everyone deserves. And I think about our queer elders all the time as I'm writing our ceremonies. So thank you.
Yes, a big thank you from everyone here to our queer elders. I'm kind of curious, going back to sort of these topics of being out, not being out, how we're represented in our community and how we identify. I'm kind of curious about the challenges you might have faced as a queer business owner interacting with other people, either in your industry, clients, things like that. And how do you feel like your experience of, as a queer person has differed from maybe your straight cis counterparts?
Do Yeah, I'll go. I don't know if I really have faced a ton of challenge. I think I've been pretty lucky to work in spaces that are pretty open. I know a common challenge is like, you know, actually, I'm going to take that back. I have one. Something that's come up a couple times, actually, is like a teenager comes into my chair with a parent, and like I can tell their parent is like holding them back from getting a haircut or color that they really want to do. And that is a really big challenge, to just like encourage this person to express themselves with also being respectful of like their parent and not being like too pushy. Yeah, and that's a very interesting thing that I don't totally know how to approach sometimes. But I think that at the same time, being a teenager and just being around like an older gay person is really inspiring. And I kind of like to always just tell them like the thing that they want is like so awesome, and it's so cool to cut your hair really short or get bangs or diet, whatever. And just like really, like, even if the thing that they want doesn't end up happening for them, just like encouraging them to have self-expression and, yeah, letting them know that what they want is really cool.
Thank you, Anna.
Well, you just inspired me about one, because I also was thinking, I haven't really had many. I think being a queer wedding officiant is really unique and actually niches me in really well. And I view it as a huge strength, because it's like drawing the right people to me. But when you said that, I was thinking about how sometimes in wedding ceremonies, because they're such public events with grandparents, parents, you know, the whole extended family, sometimes people are, maybe the pronouns they use with me, they're uncomfortable using in the wedding ceremony with their larger extended family. Or maybe their larger extended family doesn't necessarily know about all the ins and outs of their queer identities. So that's a similar challenge for me, is to create a ceremony in which first and foremost the couple feels seen and loved and validated for who they are, and respecting where they're at in their journey. They may want me to use certain pronouns for that specific occasion, or, you know, not mention certain things or mention others, and being okay with that. That's where they are in their journey, and, you know, and I love them just as you're saying in the salon chair, for exactly who they are. And this is a public event, and so I want to really make sure that they're comfortable with everything that's being said, even if, you know, it's something that's maybe like a little different than their, you know, than the way that they're interacting with me just on a, you know, informal basis. So, you know, yeah, making sure everyone's comfortable, but most importantly, the couple.
I've definitely had experiences like that where, people kind of use different pronouns for me and apologize, and that creates a really awkward office environment. But the most prominent challenge, I guess, that I have been facing the last few years as I enter into this field is that a lot of the cis straight historians are getting paid to work on our history, and it's mind-boggling sometimes to be a queer historian and the straight cis people are getting paid to do what I'm doing and extracting from our community. So I guess I'd shout that out, or highlight that queer community should be paid and should be at the forefront of documenting queer history, because that's a challenge in Portland and across the nation.
I'm wondering, do you think our cis straight counterparts are able to accurately talk about our history? Thank you. Just to clarify.
And then it's really frustrating that they get paid thousands of dollars to do the work. Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges. And I think that's what is pushing me to do the work that I'm doing, to like have queer knowledge infused in the work, to talk accurately and speak accurately and compassionately about our history.
Thank you. You all are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7, tuning in for our fifth panel in commemoration of LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. We're getting close to the end of the hour, so I have a couple more very, very important questions for our panelists. And I get to ask my favorite question, the driving force behind this entire series. What's a moment of queer joy you've experienced?
Yeah, I think it's so hard to choose just one. But the first thing that comes to mind is one of my clients. I've been working with her for over a year now. But when she first came to me, she hadn't transitioned yet and hadn't gotten a haircut in, I think, like 7 years or something like that. It was dramatic. And the experience of getting to cut this person's hair in a way that affirmed who she is, and sort of got her started on a journey of transition was really beautiful and meaningful to me. Doing a really nice, like, it was a curly cut too, and like cutting bangs and like figuring out ways to make things work, and showing her like how to take care of her hair and like how to make her curls like really defined and bouncy. It just felt like we were playing, and it was like I was thinking about how it might have been one of the first times that she got to like play around with her hair and like play around with beauty and like expression. And that's like something that I got to do so often when I was younger. And how awesome that was, and that I got to be that person and experience that. As we've continued on our journey together, on our first appointment, she had like a pretty thinning hairline. And that was like a big like insecurity for her. But over the past year that I've seen her, that she's been on hormones, her hairline has grown in like almost completely, which is, first of all, just like so cool that hormones can do that. But also getting to see her every couple of months and like see that her bangs are growing in more and like seeing how much fuller her hair is and how excited that makes her, is just so, it's not something that I take for granted. And brings me a lot of joy.
Thank you. Kayla?
I guess also it's hard to pick one overall moment, but I was thinking about this question earlier, and a lot of my joy comes from knowing that a lot of Portland spaces have queer connections, and I'm kind of in this legacy of continuing that queer connection. And kind of resurrecting places that used to have queer connection by going there. And another kind of overarching thing like that is just knowing that I get to talk to a lot of people who have historical moments and have been involved in a lot of really cool Portland things. And I get to become this like archive of everyone's stories and kind of do informal oral histories and just know all these cool things about Portland.
Like you both said, there's so many, and I'm so happy to be in the like literal, you know, just business of queer joy. And I think one of the best parts about it for me is seeing folks create events for themselves, like literally for their love, the most vulnerable thing you can really share with people, and to kind of step with both feet on the ground and say, we deserve this space, and we deserve everyone we love to see how much we love each other. And an example of this is my friend's wedding, who I had the pleasure of officiating a month or so ago. It was Lady Gaga themed, and one of the brides in the ceremony, we talked about the fact that she grew up Catholic, and she had never thought this is something that could be possible for her. And in the course of our work together, you know, to see her come into herself as, you know, a person who deserves to be seen loving someone, and to see the smile on their faces, and especially hers when we named that out loud in the ceremony, was just so beautiful. It was like, it's like flowers just opening in front of my eyes.
I think that's a good title for this, is The Business of Queer Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Updating on the website right this second. So as we're coming to a close here, it seems that we all have had two journeys in our lifetime. One is the coming of self, who we are, our identity, who we love, our sexuality, gender. And the second journey is, where do we put ourselves in this world? How do we apply this love into the work we do and the labor we do? So I'd love to hear a piece of advice you have for other queers coming into their own and trying to step into these spaces that have otherwise been occupied by the majority.
Well, I will say, I think the hair salon has historically been a very queer space. But that being said, I think just remember to play and not take it too seriously. It's just, it is fun. I think your work and working with queer people should be fun.
I actually, you should go because it just left my head.
I guess I'm trying to think of it too, especially being new in the field. But someone recently told me to not kind of edit my voice, and that's doing a disservice to me. So I guess that is what I would also want to say of, you know, documenting history, especially, is have your own voice and let it out of the closet.
I love it. Thank you. And I remembered what I was going to say too on that, which is, I think whether it's our own identity or it's our business idea, if we know it's a good idea, we can't let it die. And if we know it's who we are, we have to keep breathing life into it. And it might take a long time, and there might be no precedent for it, and there might be like no map. But if we know it's a good idea, I think queer people have always been leaders. We always have. And we know these things about ourselves, and we know our good business ideas, and it's up to us to kind of follow in the footsteps of the people who came before us and make our idea, like birth it, like make it come out, even if it takes a really long time, just one step at a time.
Thank you. Thank you. I think one of the biggest takeaways from this is, one, definitely trying everything that you love. Two, whatever labor you do put into the world, it is beginning more and more spaces for fellow queers by, you know, doing a hair business, running a wedding service business, keeping queer history alive. We are really helping also pave the way for all those who are going to come. So I just have to say once again, thank you to all of our panelists for participating and joining us for today. We had some lovely conversations on KBOO's LGBTQIA2S+ panel this first Tuesday in July. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you again to Valentine. Thank you again to Anna. Thank you again to Kayla. Again, this is KBOO Portland 90.7. I also want to say thank you to Arthur Risotto, our chief engineer, Ender Black, our co-host / board op for the evening. I also want to give a special thanks to Kate Chase, our engagement coordinator, who helped put together our panel questions and organized everybody coming here today. I am Artie Wall, and this has been the KBOO Queer Panels.
Instead of feeling alone in a group, it's better to have real solitude all by yourself.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query.
Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour of every day.